This is Ria.
And this is Ashwin.
So we found that history has a very funny way of repeating itself. It may come as some surprise to find this old cliche applies just as much to the history of computers as to wars and revolutions. So for the past four decades, one trend in computing has been loud and clear: to move away from big, centralized mainframe systems and towards a personalized, power-to-the-people, do-it-yourself PCs.
Before personal computers took off in the 80s, if your company needed sales or payroll or anything that involved calculation, you'd most likely have bought data processing services from another company with its own expensive computer systems. But today, you can do the same job just as easily on your desktop with off-the-shelf software. Or can you? In a striking throwback to the 70s, many companies are finding that once again, buying computer services makes more business sense than doing it yourself. This new trend is called cloud computing, and not surprisingly, it's linked to the internet's inexorable rise. What is cloud computing? How does it work? Let's take a closer look as Tech Talk delivers the best hitting analysis of the industry. Hello listeners, welcome to Tech Talk, and this is episode one. I'm your host Ashwin.
And this is Ria, co-host.
Hi Ria, I'm really excited to get started. Just before that, I thought it would be fun to just give our listeners an insight into the people that we are. I'm Ashwin, and I'm currently pursuing my MBA at the University of Toronto's Rotman School of Management. I have lived in India for almost 25 years, and I've worked in management consulting, audit and financial services, and also had a background in running a startup which was e-commerce based.
Oh, that's very interesting, Ashwin. I'm always curious to learn more about the startup ideas. So to introduce myself, I grew up in Bangladesh, but I moved to Canada for my undergraduate degree. And ever since, I've been working since graduation. For some time, I worked in London, UK, but all of my work experience is in the cloud. And what fascinated me most about the space is how quickly businesses were adopting this cloud migration. And I realized that many don't really understand or know much about the cloud or the terminology that goes with it. So which is why I guess it's quite interesting to have your business perspective so that we can have like a discussion. For me, with my experience, and you coming in as with a learning mentality and quite new to the space.
Exactly. Which is why I thought it would be nice to tell our listeners that I am an absolute noob, if I can say, in this world. And I'm going to be chatting with Ria, who's had the experience and kind of up my learning curve in the process as well. So Ria, just to get started, can you tell us a little about the cloud and the basics of it?
So to start with the basics, let's start with a description of what the cloud is. So Microsoft's cloud is called Azure, as many perhaps would know, and Amazon's is called Amazon Web Services. So the way Microsoft describes it is the cloud, it's not a physical entity, but it's a vast network of remote servers around the globe, which are hooked together and that are meant to operate as a single ecosystem. So instead of accessing files and data from a local or personal computer, you're accessing them online from any internet capable device. The information will always be available anywhere you go and anytime you need it. Whereas I think AWS describes it a little bit differently, but adds value to that definition as well. So how AWS describe it is that it's an on-demand delivery IT resources over the internet with pay-as-you-go pricing, which is quite an important point. So instead of buying, owning, and maintaining physical data centers and servers, you can now access technology services such as computing power, storage, and databases on as-need basis from a cloud provider like AWS, Google, or Azure. So in terms of description, it's more of a shared services that you can borrow from these big cloud providers. So they own the physical infrastructure, but us as users, we consume what we need and with a pricing model as pay as you go.
Got it. That's pretty cool. And I'm just wondering what companies did before cloud came out. Like, what was the world like before cloud?
So before, everything was on-premise, but for example, if I have to compare businesses, the larger corporations had the capacity to own these data centers to process these terabytes of data. But with the adoption of cloud, even medium to smaller businesses are able to use these computational resources as they need or as their business requires. So, which makes the competition a lot harder in this field, and it really changed the IT landscape.
Right, right. So Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and IBM maybe, would you say these are the four top cloud providers today?
In terms of statistics, I would say AWS is leading the field, but I know Azure has a great data presence in SQL servers. Google provides a great platform for analytics. For the others, from my experience, like Salesforce is one too, but I'm not exactly familiar with their platform, or even IBM. So from my understanding in terms of the stats, AWS is still leading the field. And that's because the users can have more control over the infrastructure, whereas for Azure or maybe Google, it's a little more readily available solutions.
What are the advantages of cloud? What do you think is a business case for a company to start using the cloud?
That's a really cool question, and one that's asked quite frequently. So there are many advantages of having such shared services such as the cloud, but the three that I would identify are that, one, it lowers the cost of entry. Two, it can almost anyone can almost have immediate access to hardware resources, which otherwise would not be possible because the corporations or the companies had to physically own these resources. Third, it's easier for enterprises to scale. So now I'll expand on each point. So the reason I say it lowers the cost of entry for smaller firms, it's because they can benefit from the compute-intensive business analytics that were only available for largest corporations before. So these computational exercises, they involve large amounts of computing power for relatively short amounts of time. And the cloud computing, what it does is it makes the dynamic provisioning of resources possible. So it also represents a huge opportunity for many third world countries, such as the one that I came from, Bangladesh, that were so far left behind in the IT revolution. So some cloud computing providers are using the advantages of a cloud platform to enable IT services in countries that would have been traditionally lacked the resources for widespread deployment of IT services. So that's lowers the cost of entry. That means it lowers the barriers to entry as well. So second, it's almost immediate access to hardware resources because you have no upfront capital investment for users, which leads to a faster time to market for many businesses. So treating this IT as an operational expense as opposed to a capital investment kind of model helps dramatically reduce the upfront costs in corporate computing. So it becomes like an adaptive infrastructure that can be shared by different end users, each of whom might use it in a very different way, Ashwin. So for example, with your e-commerce platform, your e-commerce platform might need different kinds of resources than perhaps my startup would need. So that way we are able to use the same platform, but tailor it to our own business needs. So the users are completely separated from each other, and the flexibility of the infrastructure allows for computing loads to be balanced on the fly as more users join the system. So the process of setting up the infrastructure has become so standardized that adding computing capacity has become almost as simple as adding building blocks to an existing grid. So the beauty of this arrangement is that as the number of users go up, the demand load on the system gets more balanced in a stochastic sense, even as its economies of scale expand. So the third one is easier for enterprises to scale, as you can imagine. And this is increasingly important because as businesses tend to grow in this IT scape quite fast. So what cloud does is that it allows for the increasingly reliant on accurate information according to the client demand. So since the computing resources are managed through software, they can be deployed very fast as new requirements arise.
It's actually very interesting that, especially the second advantage, I wanted to touch a little more on that. And when you say IT is moved from an operating expense to from a capital expenditure to an operating expenditure, and you said faster to market, how does a company, can you explain that? How does a company go quicker to market just because of cloud? It just doesn't make intuitive sense to me.
Okay, so for example, imagine if these shared resources were not available. Your client demands are increasing. You would probably need to purchase more hardware. You need to have your own data centers. You need to provision these. And it's quite a large investment, if you think about it, to have that much and have that chunk of your revenue go into these operational costs. And it's capital at the end of the day. So for businesses who can't sustain themselves through this model, the cloud computing offers pay-as-you-go. So if you're using a resource on the cloud, you only consume it for that particular few hours that you would need it for your business. So you're kind of, think of it like an Uber, but only for cloud resources. So you're just using it for one ride for your business, or maybe two rides, depending on your need. And after that certain time, you can shut down your instance or shut down the resource so you're not charged for it any further.
This is super helpful. And just from a consumer standpoint, right? Just for example, is there anything about the cloud that we are using right now to record this podcast?
We are using Google Docs to share our notes and such. We are using Microsoft Teams, which perhaps is hosted on the cloud. So there are applications even without us thinking about it. One really good example that I can give you is probably Google Docs is actually a good example, or even Gmail, which is hosted in the cloud too.
That's interesting. And what about music? When you talk about Spotify, Apple Music, are we using the cloud then as well?
Yes, absolutely.
And where does Spotify host this data? Like, for example, would it go to a Microsoft or an Amazon and say, hey, you know what, I need songs uploaded at like... So how would Spotify figure this out with Microsoft or Amazon, whoever their provider is?
I think that's a better question once we have a thorough understanding of the major concepts of cloud. When we talk about examples and business cases in our next few episodes, this would make more sense. But for now, yes, we have cloud applications in almost everything we are using, like Spotify, all the music hosts, even Uber is hosted in the cloud. So for now, that I think is enough information for our listeners.
Yeah, as I was reading about the cloud over the past few months, I've always come across these two terms, right? Virtualization and multi-tenancy. I'd love to know what your thoughts are on these two, and feel free to go in any order that you want.
Okay, those are actually pretty good terms, and I know they're quite recurring terms as well. But in addition to virtualization and multi-tenancy, I would also like to add web service to your list, just to also feed your curiosity in the space. So let's start with virtualization. It's a technology that hides the physical characteristics of a computing platform from the users. So instead of presenting an abstract emulated computing platform.
When you say emulated, what do you mean? Sorry.
So it functions very much like your operating system as you're using on your current laptop, whether it be a Linux machine, whether it's a Windows machine. So it emulates the same concept, but you're able to access it over the internet. Just virtually.
So if I have a Windows or an Ubuntu or a Linux, it doesn't matter?
No, it doesn't. You can choose actually which operating system you want, the kind of computer, the kind of mechanics you want, and the kind of computing power you would want, but you can only access it through the internet. You don't need to physically buy the hardware.
And so what I have right now in front of me is a computer that may be Windows, but I am operating on the cloud. That is, I log into a particular place, I log into the cloud and I'm using another software altogether.
Yeah, you can use your Windows machine to spin up a Linux instance. That's very possible, or even an Ubuntu instance.
Interesting. So that is virtualization, right? Because it's not real.
So you don't have any physical laptop. You don't have to buy the machine, the hardware. You're just using, you're borrowing it from one of the cloud providers to spin up your own kind of machine you would require for work.
Got it. And at this point, I can also decide what specs I want in it, how much space I want, what the RAM is, what the speed is.
Yep. And you only pay for as long as that computer is switched on, so to speak. Once you shut it down, many models allow that you don't even have to pay for it after that point.
Wow. So this is just like renting a computer for a few hours in the day or a few minutes for as long as you want the cloud.
Absolutely. That's a great way to put it, actually.
And talking about rent, how does multi-tenancy come into the cloud space? Like, what's that?
So now think about it. Anyone can spin up these instances, any kind of operating system or computational capacity that they need in the cloud. So they're able to serve a plethora of customers and clients. So it's you install one version of the application, but it serves many customers. So it's a think of multi-tenancy as a single instance of an application software serving multiple clients. So this allows for better utilization of a system's resources. So in terms of memory, processing overhead, the requirements of which could otherwise be considerable if the software instance had to be duplicated for each individual client. So I'll give you an example with Salesforce, which has a multi-tenancy spectrum, about 73,000 customers, but they only have 8 to 12 multi-tenant instances, which is a ratio of 1 to 5,000. So in other words, each multi-tenant instance supports about 5,000 tenants who share the same database schema. So you don't have to individually cater to each client, each 5,000 client.
And just to kind of probe on that example a little more, so I completely understood it. I think this is kind of fitting in together, because I was watching this YouTube video the other day where this guy who was talking about multi-tenancy broke it out in the form of, what he really described in that was, he tried to explain multi-tenancy with an example of real estate. He said, think about a building and a landlord who owns that building. And in that building, he has many rooms or flats. And he rents these individual units of flats out to different tenants. So while tenants have privacy and their own sections within the building, there's also an amount of shared resources of the entire building that are free to use, not free, but at a charge, which can be used by every tenant of the building. So while you do have your private rights to your own room/apartment, you also have access to a few shared resources that the rest of your members of the building also use. And so that is, in a way, parallel to multi-tenancy, where we're saying, okay, the cloud provider owns the building, and the different companies who are using that are probably using different units of that cloud system where they sit so beautifully without really coming in the way of other tenants, and in this case, other companies. Am I getting this right?
Yeah, I mean, your example makes complete sense. So you're sharing the whole space, but you still have your own private room within that compartment. That's what the concept of multi-tenancy is.
And to stitch this back to Salesforce, when you said 5,000 and 12, so 5,000, instead of 5,000 buildings, there's only 12 buildings?
Yeah, so there are only 12 buildings known as instances in this case, and 5,000 tenants are living in these 12 multi-tenant instances. So they probably have their own rooms, but they share the same database schema of like having this apartment complex to themselves.
That really drills that example down in my head. And I'm also going to link that YouTube video down in the show notes below so our listeners can have access to it.
So Ashwin, the other important term that you should probably know since you're in this space is what is a web service? So we often think about like TCP, IP, HTTP, HTML, XML, but do you understand what they are?
I do know that when I type a particular website in the address bar, it turns into http://.
So think of it this way. Think of these as like open protocols and standards that are used for exchanging data between applications or systems. And if you connect it with multi-tenancy and virtualization, without these standards and protocols, it wouldn't be possible for every user to connect to these shared resources, to have multi-tenancy or consume any of the resources available on the cloud. And these can be like written in various programming languages, but ultimately there are just a set of protocols and standards through which we exchange data between applications and systems.
Got it. So you're saying HTTP or XML, HTML, so all these are just different ways to achieve the same thing.
Exactly. So for example, HTTPS is more of a secure shell. So the information is passing through a secure shell, whereas HTTP is more for common usage as we use it today.
And what do you mean by when you say secure? Because what does security in this sense mean?
All right. So that what HTTP secure shell is, we'll have to wait for another episode. So I would say for our listeners to tune in to the next few episodes. But for now, just know that without a web service, we wouldn't be able to achieve and consume the resources through this virtualization method.
Awesome. You've left me curious. I'm going to have to wait till the next episode, then. This is going to keep me itching. But anyway, I learned a lot. So thank you for that, Ria. I'm really excited that our listeners are going to learn more about the cloud as well.
Same here, Ashwin, and I'm happy, and I'm learning myself too, because the space is growing so fast, and I don't think there is an X amount of information. We just need to understand it. It's always growing, it's always evolving, so it's a fun space to be in.
I wouldn't disagree. All right, until next time then.
Until next